So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 16. Hope you enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Star Wars Exile. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host Danya.
Hi.
And if you guys want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. All right, welcome back, Danya. How are you doing today?
Good. Yeah, no, I'm good. much better than the last episode. I'm not sick anymore, so that's an improvement.
That's good. We were worried about you. You sounded kind of like, at least on my end, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like she's dying. But you know what? We're gonna hang out soon, next week to be exact, at Indie PopCon. Ooh, no, yeah.
I get to meet you for the first time in person.
Yeah, so we will be at Indie PopCon June 17th and through 19th, 17th through 19th. We'll have a panel on Friday the 17th at 4 p.m. in the Wabash Ballroom with the 501st, which is pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
It should be pretty fun. We're finalizing that up right now. And then we also have some merch available. We'll have t-shirts and buttons, and those will actually be available on our website later on this month. And then the big one, the one thing I'm really excited about, is on June 19th, after the convention is over, we'll be doing a live video podcast. I've been able to figure it out. That'll be through our Facebook page, so you'll be able to do a Facebook Live. Join us. Message us, let us know, and we'll answer stuff right then and there. But it'll be me, Danya, and Eric on a live video podcast. Should be pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that's going to be so much fun. The whole of next week is going to be so much fun. I'm really looking forward to it, because I've been going to Indie PopCon since the first convention, since they started, and I think that I always have a good feeling about it, but this year I've got a good feeling about this. Instead of a bad feeling.
Well, that's good. I have a pretty good feeling about this one too. A little stressed, trying to get everything figured out for our booth. Should look pretty good. At least I'm hoping so. All right. Well, let's move on to the news. So, coming up on June 21st, there will be another update to Star Wars Battlefront. This update actually looks pretty good. Not only are you going to gain some additional characters to be playable, you're going to gain Lando Calrissian. Well, hello there. And you're also going to get the, and you'll also, that's for the Republic side, and also on the, or the Rebel side, I guess. And then on the Imperial side, the Imp side, you're going to get, the Bounty Hunter Dengar. And apparently these two characters are going to be very different from, the other characters that we have seen so far. They're going to make them not kind of be like a clone of, you know, for Lando, he's not going to be a clone of, Han Solo or anything like that. He's going to have some other, kind of lucky, scoundrelly things to make him a little bit different, as well as Dengar is the only hero that's going to have a heavy blaster as his default weapon. So, should be pretty interesting to see how these characters get in there. And then, of course, brand new map of Bespin, not only for when you're in the air with your X-Wings and TIE Fighters, but you're actually going to be able to play on Bespin as a map, which looks pretty cool. You know, I'm excited to play Luke with a blue lightsaber on Bespin. Hopefully, I don't lose a hand while doing it. But you're looking at some of the art here. It looks pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it looks incredibly cool. It's the one thing about Battlefront that's really impressive to me is it's just the art style and the graphics are always super impressive. One thing I really want Lando to do is like be able to swish his cape about and say stuff when he says stuff, like a taunt kind of thing. That would be quite fun. It would be really hilarious.
I'd be okay with that. Something like that.
I don't play Battlefront myself, but I do watch a lot of other people playing it. Like, I really enjoy watching other people playing this game. I still haven't found that one thing that's gonna make me buy it, because I don't know. I played it a little bit at friend's house, like a friend's house, and you know, it was fairly enjoyable to waste about an hour on it. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I'll be honest with you. Since I got it for a PC, my biggest problem with Battlefront, it's a fun game and I enjoy it, but my biggest problem is there's just not enough to do, or there's too much and it spreads the community around. So a good example is today I was off and I had a couple hours and I tried to play, but it took me 15 minutes to find a game. And I'm like, this just isn't fun because I spent 15 minutes waiting. Now, again, I'm on a PC versus a console. I know PS4 has a lot more people, but, you know, at least you can see with the content that they're bringing out, you know, EA is trying to bring it into something that is going to be full feature. So I'm excited for Bespin. Hopefully, you know, and every time there's an expansion, you know, there's a bunch of people playing. So hopefully I'll get a little bit of time because there'll be people playing it.
Yeah, so, hopefully.
Yep. But beyond Battlefront, more video game news, ILM X-Lab VR Trials of Tatooine will be at Star Wars Celebration Europe.
So I'm so excited about this. I saw this in the dock and was like, oh my god, this is amazing. Now, I have a real hard time with VR stuff. Like, I get really bad motion sickness for some reason when I'm playing VR stuff, but I don't care.
I wouldn't care either. Like, apparently this is just, we've talked about specifically ILM X-Lab and this Trial of Tatooine already once before, but oh my gosh, the fact that they're bringing it, like, there's videos of them showing it out, and, like, they have a whole setup and everything, and you literally are going to be a Jedi on Tatooine, defending, waiting for the Millennium Falcon to show up. Like, you're going to see it, you're going to feel it. You have a controller that is your lightsaber. Danya, I expect someone to film you, and we post it all over the internet, because this is going to be amazing.
I'm still trying to find a friend to come with me, but if I find someone to come to Star Wars Celebration with me, because I still have tickets, because I got my press pass approved, so I don't need my tickets anymore, so I can, I'm still looking for someone to buy those off me.
So you can reach her at virtual_Dawn on Twitter and message her.
Yeah, and we'll go and play this VR game, and you can film me making a fool out of myself.
Please,
if that
please
isn't
do.
Enough incentive for you.
Please do. I would love to see that. I wish I could be there, but unfortunately Europe's just a little bit of a far drive and a swim for me to get there.
I know, and I'm doing it the weekend before San Diego Comic Con.
I know, you're just traveling all over the place.
I know.
I unfortunately couldn't do that myself.
Oh, this looks so good, though. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. So go ahead and check it out. It's ILM X-Labs, Trials of Tatooine. It looks pretty cool. Next up is Rainn Johnson has posted a new teaser photo of Episode 8. It is Luke's Jedi cloak. Now, he says that shooting is almost finished, and that means that principal photography for Episode 8 is coming to a wrap, which makes me extremely excited because that means they get into the post-process phase where they're going to edit and start to do effects. And of course, they will probably have to do reshoots like we talked about with Rogue One. But this means that we are just that much closer to the release of Star Wars Episode 8. Find out more about Rey, Finn, Poe, Kylo Ren, Snoke, and all the baddies from Star Wars Episode 7. So what do you think about this? Cloak looks so cool, like, doesn't it? It's like,
I know,
it's just hanging out there. I'm like, man,
I'm so excited. I'm just like, I think the thing is like, yeah, it's okay, seeing his Jedi robes is awesome, but also just getting excited about the fact that they're in the home stretch, because hopefully that means that we'll start seeing, like, a little bit more getting teased out about the direction it might be going in.
I don't expect much teaser until we get more Rogue One trailers and stuff. But looking at this, I will say the photo is, like, beyond stage. Like, it looks like the cloak is hanging out on a C-stand. There's a tripod without a head lined next to it. There is a boom mic with the dead cat on top and an Apple box. And it looks like XLR cable and a water bottle. Like, it is, like, totally, like, hey, look at this. Like, we're going to stage a little production-style photo with Luke's cloak. And we're going to tell everyone and watch all the, you know, Star Wars fans go, oh, my God! Like, literally, like, what I did. But, yeah, it's definitely a really cool photo. It's in front of some rocks. Do you think those are on Skellig Island or in the studio that's still meant to be Skellig Island or somewhere else completely?
I would probably guess that it's the set that they've built to look like Skellig Island.
Then Octu, maybe. I don't know. You know, I don't know. It could be another planet, you know, just because there's rocks on Octu doesn't mean that there's not rocks on other planets, right? I would assume so, right?
No rocks. So, yeah. There's only rocks on that planet.
Only rocks on that planet, of course. So.
Only rocks on that
planet. So we're getting closer to episode 8. It's almost finished, which makes me super excited, really excited. Although I have to push it back. I have to kind of restrain myself just because I need to be as excited, if not more excited, for Rogue One coming out soon.
As a fan of Marvel movies and the MCU and all the superhero stuff, I'm very used to getting excited about multiple movies at the same time. Being excited about Rogue One and Episode 8 at the same time, piece of cake.
See, for me, it's like overload. Like, I'm literally going to, like, just be like, oh my gosh, I can't take it anymore. And just, like, crawl back into a hole and start crying or something. So I have to be like, okay, focus on one thing at once. Just, it's a little too much overload. Speaking of overload... Oh, did you see that segue there? We have an overload of cute coming up, right? We have something. Did you see this? It's like the most amazing thing ever. So this past week in Portland, Oregon, they had Pug Wars, a Star Wars pug parade, which I will say is probably like the cutest thing I've ever seen. My notes for this are just like, you have to see this to believe it. So to give you an idea of what it is fans of Star Wars and their pugs, they're not just pugs, but they're pets dressed up in their best Star Wars cosplay. Not just the humans, people, not the humans, but their pugs. I'm looking at a pug BB-8, a pug Vader, a pug AT-AT, two pugs in a TIE bomber. Oh my gosh, this is just so adorable. Danya, what do you think of this?
I'm dying. This is the cutest thing ever. It's the little Death Star one as well.
What about the guy in the Jabba the Hutt outfit with a slave Leia pug?
I know.
You see that? It's on a leash. It's on the chain. It's like, oh my gosh, right? So yeah. I know this is not Star Wars hardcore news, but this is kind of amazing. Like, when it comes to fans, this is one of my absolute favorite things to see is stuff like this. But like, look at, there's an Ewok pug that looks like Wicket. There, oh man, look at the Lady Vader and the Vader pug.
The Lady Vader has an umbrella as well that has loads of pugs on it.
Yeah.
But I have a friend, Amy, who absolutely adores pugs. So I don't know if she's seen this, so I might have to send this her way. She may freak out.
This is something that I feel everybody needs to see. Like, honestly, you know, I'll be honest. I'm a dog person, but I have cats. We have 3 cats in the house. My wife is a cat person, and she gets to pick what we have. So we have cats, and I love my cats. They're great. But I'm a dog person, and these pugs are amazing. I love pugs. They just look like they're having such a good time. Look at that pug. I'm sorry. I can't stop looking at the pug Vader. He just looks so happy and content in his little outfit. He's like,
and this is the thing is, I'm not usually like that person who likes when dogs are kind of dressed up. Like, sometimes I think it's really awkward and unnecessary, but this is kind of hilarious. All of the dogs look really
happy.
It was
a parade. You realize like these are multiple, not like one or two. It's like 15 or 20 that I'm looking at here, and it was a parade walking down. There's people lining the streets to see the Star Wars pug. Oh man. Like, although I will say probably one of my favorite is the Bantha pug with the little sand, you know, the little sand person thing next to it. Mm. Like, I just hear him going, like, barking, going, oh man, this is amazing. Oh, there's also a C-3PO really one. Jeez.
Yeah, it's just overload of cuteness, basically. I love it.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome. So,
all of the dogs look happy. That's the important part. All of these dogs look like actually delighted to be dressed up.
Yeah, it's not like they're being obviously they're probably being forced to do it. Like, they probably wouldn't put. I can't admit, except maybe the Vader pug. I don't think any of them would put that costume on like just willingly. But they do look like they're having a good time.
Yeah,
they're having fun with it, and obviously, you know, they're probably just getting more attention than they normally get, which is just great. So obviously, fans, we love you guys, and this is just absolutely awesome. Pug Wars, I cannot say enough about it. You have to check it out. We'll tweet about it later this week. Speaking of fan stuff, our spotlight topic coming up is Star Wars Exile. You can see it at StarWarsExile.com. Danya, you weren't part of the conversation Eric and I had with Noel earlier this week. What did you think of Star Wars Exile?
I was incredibly impressed. Like, seriously impressed. For a 15-minute, little short film, I got, ridiculously into it. And it felt, the tone of it felt very Star Wars. They managed to capture it. But they also, went super dark. Like, the bit where, he force rips the heart out of
chest. Like I said, you're not part of the conversation, which will be coming up in a minute, but that's something that we talk quite a bit about, is literally ripping the heart out. And it was one of his things is, Noel talked about how he wanted the Inquisitor to be like the Inquisitor you see in Rebels, but in real life, just really hard. And we even talked about how it's almost something like from, Once Upon a Time, another Disney type property where they're ripping the heart out, but the actress who played the character who's getting their heart ripped out, the writhing on the floor was just absolutely amazing. So it's definitely dark. My biggest contention, I will say, and you hear me talk about it with Noel, is I don't know if I liked the credits, the title crawl after the opening scene.
It's that not Star threw Wars. Me off a little bit, I will
Eric
admit.
Eric liked it, but I'm like, but you guys will hear about it in just a minute. So yeah, so you overall liked it?
Yeah, loved it. I am really rooting for these guys to do well in the Fan Film Awards because I really, really like this a lot. I think the quality of the production was amazing. Just the way it was shot, the staging of it, the sound, everything was seriously impressive.
Yep. I will say that they have some 501st members in there, which is pretty cool. Obviously, you have some authentic Stormtrooper armor, Mandalorian armor. But I will say my favorite part is, if they do well and if they can get the funding for it, they do plan on this being the first episode in a whole series. They've already fleshed out a whole bunch more. And Noel will talk about that in just a minute. So this is what makes me really excited, because it is one of those things where every character that we show, he actually was able to talk at depth about. They've already fleshed out the character backstories and everything. And this is one of the things I love about Star Wars fandom. So obviously we have pugs in costumes, and now we have Star Wars Exile, a Star Wars fan film that you can vote for on StarWars.com.
Yeah, I'm voting for this one. I am. I'm throwing myself behind this one. And if they do any kind of crowdfunding to try and turn this into a series, I'm there. I would donate money to this.
Let's do it. All right. Well, on to our spotlight topic, Star Wars Exile. Hello.
Resistance Radio, what's up?
Hey, Noel. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good, man. How's everything with you guys?
Doing well, doing well. Just got off of work and excited to be able to talk to you about Star Wars Exile.
Oh, man, I'm excited, man. I've been looking forward to it this entire week, bro. So, thanks for having me on T-Wall's show, man. It's sincerely appreciated.
Yeah, no, I saw your film on StarWars.com. I was like, man, this is a pretty well done, and let's see if we can get a hold of anyone who made it. And you responded fairly quickly, so we appreciate it. To give our listeners a quick overview, this is Noel. You are the director and one of the actors in Star Wars Exile. Is that correct?
Yeah, I co-directed it and I co-produced it with Pokey Spears. He's tied up right now, so he's not going to be able to join us. But yes, that's correct. And I wrote the project. And I was in it as well. So,
all right. Awesome. Awesome. So Star Wars Exile, you can visit their website at StarWarsExiles.com, StarWarsExile.com. And it's also up for one of the 2016 Star Wars Fan Film Awards. Did you actually write this film specifically for the Fan Film Awards this year, or was this something you were working on before?
It's crazy. No, I wrote it specifically for the Fan Film Awards. Back in July of 2015, I was sitting down and I just started, going through and I was watching a whole bunch of Clone Wars. And I was binge watching on Netflix, and I was just like, you know what? I think we should do something. And I was talking to Pokey about it, and he was like, man, I'm totally game. And then I was like, all right, because we're both actors and filmmakers. And then I went on to say, after looking at episode after episode, I was like, okay, I got an idea that's formulating, because I know people hate the prequels, but there's a lot of potential in it. You know, you just got to kind of give it a little bit of time. And then once you dive actually into the cartoons, so much rich history of Star Wars and A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. It like brings everything together. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. So, the Clone Wars makes episode 2 and 3, like, it really sheds a lot of light on Revenge of the Sith. You're just like, wow, like, that's the Anakin Skywalker that I really cared about from, you know, the Clone Wars series. And even like Rebels, exactly. Like, I noticed in your film, you mentioned, Kanan Jarrus, you know, who is from Star Wars Rebels, and your title crawl mentions Ahsoka Tano, who is obviously, you know, one of the leaders in the Rebel Alliance at this time period. So it definitely, you tied it into that time period, right, where, you know, Star Wars, Rogue One is going to be taking place in theaters this December, but like, you were right there in that time frame too. So I really enjoyed the short.
Yeah, man. And that was the idea, because we really wanted to, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Rebels as well, you know, diving into it. And even when you look at like the Clone Wars, I think that the issue with the prequels is that it was too focused around the relationship between Anakin and Padme. It should have been a little bit more focused on kind of Anakin a little bit more as a standalone, and then the relationship between him and then Obi-Wan, and then the development as he battled with the dark side, as opposed to her being that device that Lucas used to be the sole reason why he kind of decided to turn. You know, I think they could have, that's what Clone Wars shined light on. You saw he was battling with different things outside of his love and the relationship that he just had for, you know, his wife that he kept on the down low. So,
yep. All right. So just to kind of get us going, I know you said you're a big Star Wars fan. You're binge watching Star Wars Clone Wars, something that, you know, we've all probably done since now it's on Netflix. What made you fall in love with the series, with Star Wars? Is there a defining moment from your childhood or anything that you would say, like, hey, it was, you know, I grew up loving Star Wars or anything, but is there kind of a defining moment or something that you would say that this is when I saw it, or this is what made me fall in love with Star Wars?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, Empire Strikes Back, and I think for a lot of people, that was definitely when, you know, if a lot of folks in the pendulum began to swing, I was like, Empire Strikes Back took it there and beyond. I mean, I was born in 89, so, you know, I saw it a little bit later on. And, you know, even as a young kid, it was pretty clear. And that's what was just so amazing about this series, is that though it was such a simple story, it just has so much more depth and it has so much connection to the viewership. When you begin to like break down, you know, Anakin was a slave, you know, Luke Skywalker, you know, he was a farmer. And then you look at Rey, she was a scavenger. But then when you look even beyond the genesis of these characters, and you see where they ultimately go on to become, is such an inspiring story. And I think it speaks to so many people that know that they have a higher purpose and that they have a higher calling, and that the universe or galaxy, quote unquote, so to speak, is trying to pull them to in essence, bring balance and pull them into what their ultimate purpose is. And so for myself as a child, I've always just been like, my imagination has been completely out there and my vision has just been completely out there in terms of just the things that have like come to me. So when I saw Luke and I saw just the relationship that he had with the universe, when he knew there was, I mean, obviously when you go back to A New Hope and Luke standing out looking at the binary suns, I mean, that's an epic moment for everyone. Right. But I think that's also the defining piece that says to him when he makes a decision within to say, I know that I have a higher calling and I'm going to accept my purpose. I'm going to accept my fate for what I am truly to become. And, you know, it's inspired me, man, my entire life, bro.
No, I agree. The Binary Sun is one of my favorite pieces of music. And, you know, it's an iconic piece of film. Like, you can see someone looking out, and actually we see your character in the short staring out to the sun on a planet, kind of like Tatooine. It's kind of a desert planet type thing. And you have that same type of experience there. In fact, I'm going to take it away from Star Wars for a second. My background is television and film. I used to be a television editor before I moved out to Kentucky, where I'm at now. But I noticed in some of the background, the behind the scenes shots, it looks like you guys shot that on a Red camera, right?
Yeah. Red Dragon.
Yeah, so you shot on Red Dragon. I noticed on YouTube you have a 4K version, which is just absolutely beautiful. And on that, I do want to ask a little bit that actually, speaking of the sunset shot, it looks like it was maybe anamorphic or something like that, because it looks like it was distorted a little bit. There's an epic lens you had on there. What type of equipment were you using for that?
No, you're absolutely right. We used Joe Dutton lenses, anamorphic glass, and we were working with the Red Dragon, and we just had a phenomenal crew that helped out and really gave back. My director of photography, Mario Cantini, just did an absolutely phenomenal job of bringing the vision to life and, you know, working with him, in addition with working with Pokey and all of us coming together and then creating these visuals. I mean, Mario just did an absolutely phenomenal job. And then even giving a quick shout, I'm glad you asked that, to, you know, my other crew members as well. Will Myers, who was our second AD, Michael Champ, our assistant director, Garrett Daniels, our boom operator, and then John Mose, our other boom operator. I just bring them up real quick just because, you know, they just gave so much of the project. And obviously our budget was so limited that, you know, we kind of had to rely on the strength and the passion of the series for them to come out and be out there. But it was really important for us, though, to be very intentional with some of the things that we really wanted to capture. And we probably scouted those locations. It probably took us about a week looking for the places and the setups that we wanted. And it's funny, too, because somebody on Instagram hit me up and they were like, hey, man, what kind of green screen did you shoot on? And I was just like, what do you mean, what kind of green screen? And I was like, yeah. Did the green screen, did you use Photoshop? I was like, no, we shot on location. And they were like, well, man, how did you guys cut in, the environment and everything? I was like, once again, we shot on location. No, that's a real location that we scouted a week prior to the shoot.
Where was that at? Where was that desert at?
Yeah, it was actually in Lancaster.
Okay.
It's not even, like, literally we used GPS, like, coordinates to send out to the cast and the crew when we were traveling. It's literally smack dab, bro, like, in the middle of nowhere. So it's not like where it's like, hey, guys, let's all meet up in, like, you know, the scenic desert or something like that. Like, literally, it was, like, 36 West, 42 North Long. Like, it was crazy.
Anyone get lost on that trip?
One time, it was a little chaotic because signal out there, as you can imagine, is like absolutely crap. So we had to kind of go from like where we were shooting to the road and, you know, scream really loud. And yeah, so it kind of reminded us of like The Hills Have Eyes 3. So at night we would get kind of nervous and be like, all right, let's wrap this shit up and let's get up out of here.
Oh no. Yeah. I know we're like, I was born and raised in LA, so I know California fairly well, so I know Lancaster. What about the forest scene at the very beginning? Where was that located at?
Yeah, Angeles Forest.
Okay.
Which is, I feel like it's a hidden gem in LA. I think like everyone goes like Runyon Canyon and
I thought you guys may have gone up to like Big Bear or something like that, just like the wide open space that you had. So
but yeah, we wanted to, because that's why even with that particular scene, a lot of our shots are a little bit limited when it comes to getting a lot, you know, more establishing and wise, because we have to keep it extremely tight and intimate for the most part in the character, because there's certain parts and areas of like that actual scene where, or the location where like the trees are just way too like dense. And we wanted to kind of create a feeling that they were on the planet of Endor. And as you all know, like, you know, you got these big ass red pines and everything. And it was hard to accomplish that with, you know, the limited budget that we were operating on. And so literally, like, we went up to Angeles Forest, and there's, like, this trail that they had blocked off that once you walk down it, it's, like, this small little, it's no bigger than, like, half a mile of even that of, like, this, like, island almost of trees and everything. And did you guys see the TIE Fighter fan film where the guy, like, it's, like, they use the same exact location that we use with the forest area.
Oh. That, you know, in the LA area, there's only so many places to shoot. You know, I remember in film school kind of being in that same area for different types of shoots also. So, no, there's certain areas that are pretty common. You end up seeing them in TV shows pretty often and different things like that too. So, now you chose some great locations, and I agree. Some people couldn't tell that they were actual locations because they literally were perfect for what you were doing.
Spot on. So
yeah. So part of the, you know, what's interesting for me, the biggest thing about this is you titled this episode one. I know obviously you told us that you did this for specifically the Fan Film Awards. Are you planning to do more in this series of Star Wars Exile, or is this kind of like a one and done type thing?
No, we are looking at creating more. We actually wanted to, I guess, I don't know if I should spill the beans quite yet, but we are looking at continuing this project on. And we have some really great things that, you know, that is developing. And, you know, we're just talking to the team, and other people have been approaching us about, you know, opportunities. So, you know, we're getting that together, and it's going to be exciting, because what we want to do is really complete the story, adding more elements of the characters, adding more elements of obviously the Star Wars universe, and then giving the fans ultimately what they want. And, you know, going through the YouTube comments and seeing what people are saying and getting their feedback and certain adjustments that we can make, and what we feel as though when looking at it in hindsight in 2020, how can we improve? How can we make the story stronger? What can we add? What can we take away? Right. So, you know, we're really excited about the future, and we're really excited about, you know, what we're looking at going in the future. And I think the fans are going to be pretty pleased.
All right. We're glad that you're going to continue on with it. So I do have a question here. Your film, Star Wars Exile, starts off on that forest planet, which we said you wanted to be Endor. And it goes through a whole thing with stormtroopers and a character that is a Boba Fett-esque character. I know IMDb actually labels him as Boba Fett, but he's in different type of armor. And then after that whole scene, we'll still talk about that scene in a minute, but after that whole scene, then you go to the actual title crawl. You know, whereas every other Star Wars film has always done the title crawl at the very beginning to help set up the entire, you know, story, you decided to have a scene at the beginning and then go to that title crawl. Was that intentional? Was that something your editor did? What made you choose something so different from the Star Wars series itself?
Yeah, no, it's funny you say that. My editor, who's like a diehard, Ryan Harris, Ryan Stephen Harris, shout out to him, did a phenomenal job on it. He's like a diehard, like, you know, classic Star Wars baby. And he was very much so against the idea of bringing in the crawl after that scene. He wanted to, you know, keep it the traditional way. And he felt like the fans were really going to have a problem with it. But, you know, when you look at that time, and that's what the biggest thing that really caught my attention, and why I really want to talk more about, you know, this particular piece. When you look at between episode 3 and then 4 and then Jedi, obviously the Order 66, which, you know, it's kind of polarizing. Some people like it, some people hate it. But you think about what was taking place with Jedi being completely eradicated, you know, them being slaughtered all around the galaxy. I felt that it was really important and to be very intentional of bringing the audience right into the action. You know, I feel like sometimes when you look at the crawl, and while I love it, don't get me wrong, it kind of goes on and it sets the story up. And then, you know, you finally get into what's happening. And I thought that what was going to be more impactful, and again, it's a fan project, right? So it's like you have that ability and liberty to kind of create and do something where you can take certain risks and you're not going to lose millions of dollars of people all around the world are going to hate you, right? That's the point of it being a fan project. So
yeah, it's a passion project. It's not something that the studio is going to be like, hey, you screwed this part up. You know, it's, you know, we didn't make $1 billion on this film now. So, you know, I get that.
For the record, I love this choice. I absolutely loved. I feel like it accomplished everything you were trying to go for, bringing you right into the action with, is it Quinlan Vos on the run and fighting for his life. And, you know, the at the end of that sequence, when he witnesses that terrible death and screams out essentially, and then that goes to the crawl, I leapt with glee. It was really brilliant in my mind.
I'm gonna be on the complete opposite side. I'm gonna have to side with your editor on here. I was like, well, okay. I'm like, okay, cool, it goes right, you know, you have the little title and everything a long time ago, went right into the action. I was all for it. And Mikey, then it went to the crawl. I was like, what is this,
Mikey?
This
is not Star Wars. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. We get it. It still starts the same way as every other Star Wars
except
film.
There was no title crawl. The crawl
there
came after the
crawl.
Action. I will say, Noel, I agree with your editor. I think it was a bad choice, but apparently Eric doesn't agree with me.
I absolutely love it. No, I will tell you, that was awesome.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for sticking to that.
And the idea, what I really wanted to get across, and I think, you know, some people may get it, some people do, or they don't like it or may not, is that the action almost serves as that beginning title crawl. Yeah. Like, as opposed to it being, like, completely just, you know, given to you, like, hello, guys, let's read, you know, reading Rainbow Reading Time. Here's what's happening. We want it. You know, we want. Mm-hmm. Oh, my bad. Go ahead, bro. My bad.
Yeah, yeah. There's very little accountability for that opening crawl, I find. Because if you look at Force Awakens, for instance, the way that that opens in that crawl explains a lot of stuff that doesn't really actually make it into the film in the finished version. So that is probably the weakest crawl of all the Star Wars films, and that's the newest, the most recent. And I just feel like because that happens at the very beginning of the movie, no cold opens, no nothing, people tend to forget about what it even said, especially because it's several paragraphs long.
Right.
I tend to support the decision to show something a little bit first because
But it's not the same as the film! I will say, regardless, Noel, I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it, and I get where it came from, but like it was a little jarring to me as a longtime Star Wars fan, and I was like, it should have been there before. I get it. Like, honestly, it was that opening scene dropped you right into action. There was, you know, a shock. There was a shock moment for it. The fact that you get cut up, you know, it cuts to the crawl right as you see Darth Vader coming up with the saber lit and everything. You're like, all right, it definitely feeds its purpose. It's like almost kind of like the movie before the actual next movie. So like, it's good. Yeah. Like, I like it, but at the same time, it's like, I wish I had the crawl before, and that's just my personal opinion. It's not a bad thing. But moving on, I do want to go through it. So it sounds like we're going to go ahead and get some more information, you know, more episodes here. Are we going to get any backstory of, like, the bounty hunter? Was that Boba Fett? Was that someone else? You know, did you flesh any of that out or no?
Yeah, so Boba Fett was in there as well. Boba was who Quinlan, when he cut the Mandalorian armor, after he did the little roll as he was going towards Boba when he was shooting the blaster at him. And the other Mandalorian that you saw in it, his character's name, Dendros Gnet. Ooh. And he's actually a fictional. So you guys have heard of the Mandalorians, right? The Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Mandalorian
yeah.
clan.
It's a yeah, Star Wars podcast. You know, we should have heard of those, you know, Mandalorians or something, right?
Right, I know, right? Go for it. Yeah. So he was actually, I contacted the Mandalorians because we were in need of just trying to fill out that opening scene as much as possible. And so I was talking to the president and the leader of the clan, and he was pretty much telling me that he was putting the word out to, you know, his members, because what was really important for us, especially from a costuming standpoint, again, our budget is very limited, but we did know that we had very, very, you know, hardcore Star Wars fans within the 501st and also within the Mandalorian clan that would be very open and maybe, you know, very interested in coming and being a part of the film. And then they have these costumes that they've been working on for years. So after I shared the script and I pretty much told them, hey, here's what we're looking for. Here's the setup of this opening scene. He was able to recommend both Boba Fett, who was played by Brent Rudman, and then Dendros Gnet, who's played by Ben Baker. But with Dendros Gnet, his character is completely fictional. Again, you know, the Mandalorians, quote unquote, and don't cut my head off of this, I hope no one gets mad, but I don't think that the Star Wars universe, the Mandalorian clan, I don't know if they look at them as like, they don't look at them like how the 501st is, because technically speaking, they're not canon, and many of the characters are just kind of created. If I'm not mistaken, they're created by the members who join. So with and Dendros, the Red Boba Fett, you can say the Red Mandalorian, in his particular case, that was someone who Ben had imagined and then kind of implemented within the Star Wars universe. And he comes from an outer rim world that's like a jungle planet. And, you know, based on his background and his history, he looks up to Boba. And that was actually his first time coming in contact with him on that particular expedition when they were set to, you know, track down Quinlan Vos, who is canon, technically speaking. I absolutely love
this is why I love Star Wars, is that like even like the bounty hunter that's in the very beginning, which is not part of like the main story, but kind of setting it up, you have a full backstory for him already. And that's what I love about Star Wars, because like all these characters have such a really kind of rich backstory that can be added, and whether it be the fans that add it, or if it's just, you know, the actual story that is built in canon. We're actually doing a live podcast with the 501st next week in Indianapolis at a convention. So no, I totally get awesome. I know the 501st. I know the Mandalorian troopers. And I know the rebel, Rebel Legion, who does their costuming for Rebel stuff. So we're excited that they were able to work with you guys. And it, obviously, it adds definitely some things that are it adds a polish to your film, because you have like these movie accurate costumes inside of it, which is awesome.
Yeah, and they were great. I mean, huge shout out again to Brent, to Ben, to Christopher Baker as well, TK69770, and then Emmanuel Paja, TK52227. I mean, not only did they help us with shooting, and we only had two stormtroopers that we just had to kind of keep recycling and shooting around. I'm not sure if you guys noticed that.
But no, they all kind of look the same. So unless you put like blood splatter on one of their masks, we wouldn't know the difference between them. They all kind of look the same.
Yeah, you know, there's not much of a difference.
Now, I didn't hear this in it, but I could have just missed it. Did you guys use the Wilhelm scream, you know, that standard, you know, movie scream that's used in every film, you know, forever, when a stormtrooper got hit at all, or no?
Oh, no. We did.
Okay, I didn't think I saw it, but now that you're talking about using the same stormtroopers over and over, I'm wondering if, like, one of the stormtroopers died, you know, in air quotes, you don't see my fingers going up in the air, you know, and he did the Wilhelm scream there. I'm just saying, maybe for the next episode, that needs to make its way in there, because, you know, it's been in every Star Wars film, and Indiana Jones and everything else.
If you ever had one fall off a cliff or something, I think that would make
you're absolutely right, man. No,
we do,
and...
Hey, keep going.
Oh, no. And that's something that, you know, really, especially as we move forward with the series, we're really going to flush out a lot of the details and the classic devices that are used, you know, within the actual canon universe. And we're going to kind of change a little bit of the story, because, you know, one of our goals and hopes is that we can just take this project from, you know, the channel and then possibly put it on some form of distribution platform. Ideally, StarWars.com, but, you know, we're just taking everything step by step, and, you know, we're just trying to get it out, and then hopefully it's something that they look at and they recognize, and then we could take this project to the next level with our team, so it's exciting.
So, going back to that beginning scene, towards the end of it, you have your Inquisitor ripping the heart out of a Jedi.
I love this so hard.
Okay, so here's the thing is, so here's where I'm like, one, the acting, the female Jedi was phenomenal, like screaming around on the ground and everything, like she's bending her body in every way imaginable, which I was like, wow, that's they did a good job, and we know the direction on that. But like, this is something that we don't see normally in Star Wars. Now, that's very, to me, it was very reminiscent, like when he held the heart in his hand. It's something that you see like in Once Upon a Time, another Disney type of property where they remove the hearts fairly often. But what, you know, that's something we don't see normally, like ripping a heart out in a Star Wars, you know, film or in, you know, the Star Wars canon or books or anything. What was that meant to show? Was it meant to show his power, his ruthlessness? You know, how did you guys decide to do that? Like ripping out the heart? That's almost more like medieval, like a Merlin or Cyber Sorcerer type fantasy thing than Star Wars.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point, and someone even made a mention of it. It reminded them of a kung fu movie. One of my buddies said that, like, you know, and I was like, well, I guess you're right. But, yeah, I mean, the Inquisitor is just one of those guys that he gets into the mind of his victims. And, you know, if you think about it, too, realistically speaking, if we take away the idea of Disney and the brands that are attached, that are controlling the over, and the classicness of it, obviously, that's surrounding Star Wars, I mean, if you're saying I have the ability to move things, and this is what we were talking about when we were going through the script and we were looking at things to change and modify, but if I have the ability to move things and I have the ability to push you, why not take the power one step even deeper, which he has the ability to not only just move objects externally, but also internally? And one of the things with the Inquisitor, and as you guys probably noticed in the film, you heard whispers before you even saw him, and then he came and struck the girl. And that was played by Bria Roberts, and she was Jedi Jay. And while in the process of striking her, what he was trying to do, even in Sean Quinlan, is that the power of the Force that lies within him and what he's willing to do in order to completely just destroy his enemy is completely ruthless. And it goes back to as well, I mean, we're talking about, again, Lord Sidious and, you know, Darth Vader are wreaking havoc on people all around the galaxy. I mean, they're finding Jedi, you know, Jedi, and they're completely killing them. So the idea really with this was to show just how freaking dark and just how freaking ruthless. And as you guys saw too, when we got to the Tatooine planet, we pulled back and we showed that gloomy and darker side, and then we pulled back so that it didn't go too far off the edge.
Right.
But the idea though with his character is that he does not have any form of parameters, and he doesn't have any form of limits, even as it relates to the filmmakers who are creating it and the quote unquote brands that surround it. I mean, this guy doesn't give a damn. So
no, he's the kind of character who plays with his food before he eats it. He struck me as being a very, like, this was a very Sith type character that could certainly exist in this universe, but that because of Disney, because of, you know, appealing to general audiences, we would never see. But I immediately, when I saw that, and I didn't know he was about to rip Jedi Jay's heart out, but when she was writhing on the ground after having just been impaled with the lightsaber, I was thinking, oh man, you know, he is like torturing her as she dies for Quinlan's, you know, disgust to, like, to mind, mind fuck him. And it's just like when her heart comes out, it's just like, holy crap. You know, this was totally, this is a guy who is, as you say, exploring those, he's gone unchecked. He has no limits, no parameters, and he exists in the dark side of the Force. I feel like we could use more guys like the Inquisitor in Star Wars canon, because it ultimately, otherwise you just get stale mentions of the Sith being like unnatural and, you know, harmful.
Right.
And oh gosh, that's it's so bad. They're the bad guys. But like seeing something like this, I mean, the empathy was amped up so much for the good side, and it was a truly terrifying character. So I mean, bravo, man, for like the 5 minute first scene there. That was a character that I will watch until his gruesome end, for sure.
Thank you, man. Thank you, and even, you know, again with constructing him, and then I just feel like I get it. You know, Star Wars has classic devices that, you know, fans hold really, 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 really tight to. And the biggest thing we heard a lot is, that's not Star Wars. That's not Star Wars. That's not Star Wars. But it's like, as you continue to evolve and you continue to grow, well, you know, why can't the story change? And I think what, especially like a rated R Star Wars, or a Star Wars that's darker than what we're used to seeing, it's like just like untapped territory that can go so many different places. And I'm not saying, you know, turn it to some form of like lightsaber, you know, slasher project, by all means. You know,
I want to see a lightsaber chainsaw. I really do. Right. The Tatooine chainsaw.
Here's Yoda.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know.
Like, I just gumbo on the ship with this, like, here I am. And he's just like hacking through doors and like cutting heads off. No, but again, that's not what we're saying by any means, but I think that there's a darker element that, you know, Lucas has only just scratched the surface of. And what we want to do with Exile is kind of rip that open, similar to how we took the heart out of her chest cavity. So there is more to come that will be very polarizing. I'll just say that.
And that's awesome. That's what we're waiting for. Is we want more to come that's going to kind of change the direction of what we're used to seeing. So moving on to the rest of the film, obviously then after that beginning scene, then there's the credits that I love. Should have been at the beginning, but moving on beyond that, we have the story. We learn about Mikaela and Bomana, right? And, you know, we see the fight between them and the Inquisitor. And Bomana, at the very end, she, you know, admits that she loves Mikaela, right? You know, that's her love has been, you know, blinding her from leaving him to really become a Jedi. Now, at the end, the Inquisitor stands up and she stands up with him. Did she fall to the dark side in that moment, just like Anakin, because of her love for Mikal?
Did she betray him? Did she betray Mikal?
That's what I'm saying. Like, at the very end, did this happen? Like, did this really follow that same thing? Which is not bad. Like, what's happening here? You have to tell us. Like, we saw it. We watched it. We're like, really? Like, come on. We need to know more. You just end it right there.
I know, right? We really did leave on a cliffhanger, and it was just the idea was that with Bomana, she is very much so, as much as she loves and she respects the Order, and she was completely, you know, sold out on what the Council was pretty much saying, when, you know, in terms of the ideas and ideals, in terms of the code and the Order and the way they, you know, were to operate. and the things that they needed to follow. And one in particular being love, right? And how very similar to like priesthood, you're not supposed to fall in love because if you do, it can lead to other things. And there's been even a huge debate with Anakin saying that if the Jedi Order was not so, you know, rigid and structured in the sense that you're not allowed to fall in love or have feelings for, you know, anyone else, then Anakin may have never even turned because he would have been able to deal with those problems and deal with the feelings of loss
and the
issues that he even had with his mother, as opposed to completely neglecting it. And so Bomana's character blames the Council for what happened with the Order 66. And so when that takes place, there were many Jedi, a few that pretty much were able to flee and survive, Quinlan Vos being one of them, and then her character as well. And then with her training McCall and with him at a very young age, she began to develop certain feelings for him because he was the only thing that reminded her of the past as it relates to what they once had with Pete. And so as the story develops and unfolds, with her trying to show McCall, let's leave it all behind us, forget the Order, you know, forget the Resistance, forget the Rebels, forget the Sith, forget everything, and let's just start a new life together. But McCall, again, we talk about the universe, and we talk about how the Force continues to call at you, right? Mm. Like your purpose, your destiny, it constantly calls to you, it pulls you. Like I grabbed that feeling within that can't, it, like you don't know how to explain it or verbalize it, but you know that there's something deeper there. And that's what his character is stuck in, and she recognizes that. And so as a result, the feelings that she has for McCall, she's completely said, fuck the Order altogether. Right? And the feelings that she's like, fuck the Order. Like they don't, and I know some of the dialogue, and I take credit, you know, and took responsibility, was a bit murky and trying to decipher and really decode, because a lot of it had so much like context and then subcontext in terms of, well, what the hell is really happening here and what are they talking about? But she's in that news, these scenes, she's trying to convince them that, look, these guys, they didn't know what they were doing, right? They led us down one path, but look what that path has ultimately, you know, gotten us. And so the people being slaughtered, people that she cared about, her own master being killed, the people that she had deep feelings for. And so it's almost like a man who questions God and the idea of religion altogether. And so in that final scene, when Bomana is faced with telling McCall to go and leave, it's also the decision that she makes of saying that, though I am no longer a Jedi, I realize that I'm not neutral either. I am more so Sith than anything, if that makes sense. Because the films that she had for McCall were deep, but she has an even greater disdain for the Order. And that's what we want to later explain as we, you know, I'm talking, you know, ahead of myself, but we're going to explain in the series that she has a greater disdain for the Order as a result of what has happened with the eradication of everyone around the galaxy. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
no, it does.
McCall calls her out on that as well earlier with the line of dialogue. It says, like, those are more Sith ways of thinking anyway. You know, I think he senses it. I think that makes sense to him as well. You know, in the future when they meet up and she's, I don't know, you know, a Sith, I think that won't necessarily surprise him as much. But, you know, obviously they'll still have their backstory, their combined history together and their relationship, which will be very intriguing, actually. And I don't think they've done that before on Star Wars, is having people face off who love each other. I mean, the bromance between Obi-Wan and Anakin, maybe, but not quite like this.
Right, right. Or like with Ahsoka, and then obviously like with Anakin, but not, like you said, not in the sense of where there's love. And so that idea is that, you know, love is such a powerful thing, because if you turn love and you look on the other end of it, there lies hate, right? And so when love turns into hate, it's one of the most powerful, you know, forces that can be used. Whether you look at terrorists and they say out of the love of whatever religion that may be, they decide to go and bomb, you know, a building, or, you know, you look at a man who loved his wife so much that it drove him over the edge and was like, if I can't be with you, no one can be with you. So then he ends up murdering her. You know what I mean? So we really want to dive into that particular emotion and what it means, and then what happens when love drives you to the other end. And now you're in a state of hate as opposed to the once love that you have for that individual, once you let go, that is. So, yeah.
I absolutely love that we're able to, you're able to explore this in your own creative outlet with like the fan films and stuff. So it's just one of those things that we don't see in the films because they're so rigid on what they can and can't go into. So it's absolutely great that you're able to kind of dive into that specific emotion between love and hate there. Because we do see it a little bit in the films, but not to the extent, like, you know, Eric mentioned between Anakin and Obi-Wan, you know, he was my brother. You know, I think I will say that, you know, Ewan McGregor's, you know, depiction of crying, you know, yelling at Anakin about it was great, but this is something that's going to be completely different because it's more so than just, you know, familiarity, like a brother type one. This is someone who literally grew up taking care of him and loving him almost like a mother because, you know, she rescued him.
Right?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, you know, Oedipus Rex type, you know, syndrome or something like that. So it's there, but it's one of those things right. Where it's like, this is a very deep emotion and the fact that you're going to be able to explore it is just something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. And again, I mean, look at what happened even in the opening scene with the Inquisitor. And what did he do? He ripped a heart. You know, he ripped a life, you know, the epicenter of the girl when facing off against. So his character, he's all about manipulation, conquer, and divide. And he ultimately wants to get to McCall. He's using Bowman more so as a pawn to what his final plot, which will be revealed in the later episodes, is, and that's exactly why he affects her in a way, and it begins to even get in the mind of her. If you notice, our Lucas cut and then the initial cut that we put out there to the fans is different, and we wanted to show more of a connection with his ability to really incept, you know, his victims and to incept those he comes in contact with. If he sets any form of doubt or fear or passion that's not controlled, his ability is to manipulate that individual and then take them to the far end of it, you know? And so that's what takes place with her, and that's what we're going to explore as the series develops and the relationship with McCall in the final face-off between all three of the characters.
Awesome. Well, Noel, thank you for being on the show. Is there anything else you want to say to any of our listeners about Star Wars Exile?
Man, I want to first start by saying thank you, guys. I mean, it's an absolute pleasure to come on, man. It really does mean a lot that you guys reached out to us and, you know, you actually want to talk about our project. The entire team is so grateful and appreciative of what Resistance Radio, you know, giving us this opportunity. So thank you all. And we know we just ask you guys to continue to vote for us in the official Disney Star Wars Fan Film Awards. I'm actually going out to New York tomorrow to go speak at EternalCon. So anyone in the New York area, come out to that. We're going to screen the project at the Miami SuperCon as well, July 4th weekend. And then we'll be in London. So just thank you guys for your love. Thank you for your support. Thank you too for the hate and the, you know, the brutally honest criticism and how we can get better. We are so humbled and we're really appreciative of you all and Lucasfilms as well and Disney for giving fans an outlet to showcase what we can do, not only, you know, behind, but in front of the camera and taking this series and this fucking amazing story just a higher level. So thank you, guys. Seriously, it really means a lot.
All right, hey, well, man, thank you.
I'm blown away by Exile. I can't find a negative thing to say, but it looks good. It sounds good. It moves me. It scares me. I love it. Nice work. Nice work.
Thank you, guys.
It's
thank
phenomenal. So thank you for coming on, Noel. We appreciate it.
All right, y'all. All right, man. Well, may the force be with you all.
Oh,
may
and
the force
you.
Be with you. Yes.
Take care, man. We'll talk
all
to
right.
you later.
Take care, sir.
Thanks again.
All right. All right. No problem. All right, bye.
All right, so that was Noel and Exile. I know, Tanya, you didn't get to be part of that conversation. That was me and Eric, but we're at the end of our show. Thank you all for listening. As always, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Tanya.
And I'm Eric.
And I guess next time we'll be coming to you, it'll be live from Indie PopCon.
That's true. We're going to be live at Indie PopCon, both on Friday's panel, which we're going to record and maybe get uploaded at some point, but then the live podcast on the 19th. All right.
So we'll see you then, guys.
See you then. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye now. Bye. All right. May the force be with you.